And welcome to the show. I'm Mike Indest, your host, and we have again with us Matt Crossland. Dr. Crossland, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. This is part two of talking about the Lifesavers Underground record called The Grape Prophets. And if you want to find out what we talked about before, well, go listen to the other podcast, because quite frankly, I think we forgot what we talked about before. Yeah. But this is an interesting topic to talk about. You know, last time we talked to Nate Allen about spiritual abuse, and we've been on this topic now for maybe 8 months, and that wasn't the initial concept for this podcast, but that's just kind of where this is going, which is interesting because I think the magazine, a lot of people in Down the Line magazine have already talked about some of the spiritual manipulation and abuse that they have dealt with in their past. And now all these allegations are coming out about sexual abuse in Catholic and Protestant churches. And I'm wondering when the spiritual abuse allegations are going to come out and how that's going to be handled. So Matt and I have different backgrounds. I grew up in the church, and Matt was a Satan worshiper for a long time, and then right, became a Christian. So let's get your outsider opinion of this. You know, Michael Knott in this Lifesavers Underground record calls out what he saw was as spiritual abuse in the 90s, the early 90s, if I remember right. Right? What time? When did this record come out?
It came out like 92, and I think you're talking about events from the 80s.
Yes. And so that's interesting. There's also some other documentaries you can watch about spiritual and some sexual abuse that went on even before then in some of these Protestant communities. And I'll just leave that there. Just do a search and you can find it. So coming from your background, because I obviously have a lot of baggage that I'll bring with me, you know, you were not a Christian for a while, and then I know you had kind of veered a little bit far right when you decided to I hate to follow Christ. That sounds so Jesus people, but you kind of it's kind of a hard road to navigate, right?
Yeah, it's you know, I mean, I grew up in, you know, rural Texas, Waco, Texas, and so there's a, you know, there's a Baptist church on every corner, and they're usually, you know, fighting with some of the God church on the other corner. You know, there's you know, lots of representation of certain spirit, certain Christian traditions there. You know, not so much the more high church stuff, but there's even a few of those there as well. Like one or two Orthodox churches and several Catholic churches as well, of course. You know, so you see that, you know, as an outsider, you even kind of consider yourself at many points in your life as a believer in God, a believer in Christ. But, you know, I came to a point where I really examined that and realized that I didn't know what I believed. You know, this was, you know, preteen years. And my parents didn't go to church, and so they didn't feel like forcing religion on me either. So my introduction to church, I don't think, have I shared this with you yet about what where I really started going to church, what happened when I got arrested?
No, I didn't. That. Oh, all right. We got some dirt now.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do the thing of going to vacation Bible school during the summer, kind of the thing to do, you know, parents, you know, when you have young kids, they teach you everything, right? Try to get you to everything, you know? But when I was in high school, I had some friends who were actually cousins of mine and also some friends, too. And we got in trouble. We did a lot of things that we shouldn't have. And one of them was shoplifting, and so we got caught and arrested for shoplifting at a Target in Waco. And so my dad, as part of my punishment and rehabilitation, said that I was going to start going to church. And so he had a buddy that he worked with that went to a Lutheran church and said, you're going to start going to this youth group. And so that's was kind of my introduction to the whole church thing, was I started going there to get my life straight, you know, according to my parents. This is when I was 15 or 16, so just for context. And this is in the late 80s for cultural context. And so that was my introduction to church, was also nice to start going regularly, whether I wanted to or not. And, it was just this kind of interesting world to me with them because there were a lot of people that were there because they grew up there, and they were doing a lot of partying and stuff on the side, and I really didn't see how necessarily this would straighten my life out, right? But there was definitely all these systems of rules and regulations you were supposed to follow and do's and don'ts, and I obviously stepped over a lot of those, not knowing them, not growing up with them. And but then I took a kind of a hard turn from there and decided that I really wanted to get serious with religion and started studying a whole bunch of different religions, you know, Satanism. That's where the Satanism, you know, came in, and that's where, you know, even like Islam and Buddhism and New Age stuff, and I just looked at a whole bunch of things. And then, you know, that's when I got hooked up with Young Life, and they had the speaker who told us we were going to hell if we didn't pray the prayer. And so I said, well, I don't want to go to hell, so I better pray this prayer. And I better get serious about this church thing. And that's when I got hooked up with some buddies who were going to an Assembly of God church. So that's where I got connected to Assembly of God church. So I went from Lutheran to Assembly of God.
I went the other way, so...
Really?
Yeah.
So you know the difference there. Yeah. And the slight bit of difference. But then, you know, the Assembly of God is where you start running into a lot of the charismatic stuff that Michael Mott was dealing with in A Great Prophet. Of course, his was within a Vineyard Church conference context, which is different, but probably more similar to Assembly of God than, say, Lutheran because of all the raising hands and speaking in tongues and stuff. And then... you know, quickly got burned out by the Assembly of God and left that and went the exact opposite, ended up at a Southern Baptist church that was more a charismatic Southern Baptist church. And they were connected with the Vineyard churches, and so I started doing a lot of stuff with Vineyard churches as well, which sounds like a weird combination, and they saw it as a weird combination as well, but they still did it. So I was going to, you know, Vineyard college conferences in San Luis Obispo. You know, we had people like David Reese and Kevin Prosh and Mike Bickle coming to speak at our church. And so that's when I got kind of connected with the whole movement that had also been a part of the thing that Michael Knott was a part of, but didn't realize it really until probably a couple of years after The Great Prophet came out when I actually finally got my hands on a copy, right? Because they were a little bit hard to get your hands on a copy, you know, because of distribution problems that Knott ran into with his distribution company falling apart. And then listened to it, I was like, oh, wait a second. He's talking about people that we brought to our church, you know, after all these problems happened. So I was like, oh, wait a second. That's a problem. So that was probably the beginning when I started really questioning a lot of these practices and things that were happening. So might have gotten off track on your question. I'm sorry.
No, that's fantastic. But I guess the problem is if you're in a Vineyard church and you maybe start looking and asking, you're not going to get very far, right?
Yeah, not himself said he when he saw these people doing these weird things, you know, he's in a Vineyard church, and for people who don't know a Vineyard church, they, you know, they have the whole thing, they have the traveling anointed people who come in, and they, you know, they preach a sermon, and the Spirit of God falls, right, and people start raising their hands and getting emotional and falling over and running around barking like dogs, and, you know, you see all kinds of crazy stuff happening, right? And so if you join up with one of these in your churches, you're still okay with that. But Mike Knott was still like, oh, wait a second. They've got to step beyond all of that, right? There's something even weirder here that just doesn't seem right, you know. I started seeing people barking like a dog. I was like, something's wrong with that. But, he saw these the Great Prophet saying weird things, and the English interpreter of English would, you know, maybe he didn't call himself that, not call them that, but that's, you know, this guy started interpreting English words, you know, and they started prophesying what happened to people if they didn't become Christians in the first place, and this weird stuff happened, and not questioning it. He said he lost all of his friends, right? He's been very forthright about that. Just he questioned it in the Vineyard church, and he lost all friends. But then he found out later that someone finally woke up and John Wimber finally realized that something was wrong, and he issued a repentance statement of ever having the Kansas City Prophets at his church. So I guess it did finally end up being okay, but I think the first people to question those things didn't turn out too well for them, unfortunately.
That's kind of like the history of Christian alternative music too, right? The first ones out the gate that push the envelope are the ones that get their heads chopped off. Uh-huh. And then, you know, you're like, hey, Collective Soul sounds a lot like Daniel Amos, you know, but, you know, so.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, like, hey,
I just got into Christian music at the time, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. Like, wait a second. So this is, you know, like I said, I grew up Catholic and then Assemblies of God. And then, you know, I went back to, or found the middle ground, I guess, in Lutheranism. But going back to what you said about saying the sinner's prayer, do you look back on that as a manipulative act? All right, the devil must have cut the phone line.
No.
Yeah. So I guess I was asking, or somebody was listening in that didn't want us to talk about this,
yeah,
and cut it off. Did you think that, you mentioned, you know, the fear of hell, and you said, well, I better just say the sinner's prayer. You know, I know a lot of people in that situation. Do you, looking back on that, do you feel that that was a manipulative act to the way that was presented?
Well, you know, I've seen it presented in very manipulative ways in many churches that I've been a part of. And people that are definitely just trying to control people by getting fear. In my context, it happened at a Young Life rally or a Young Life retreat in at Windy Gap in North Carolina. And it was kind of an open invitation that if you hadn't prayed the prayer, here's your opportunity. So it was probably a little bit manipulative, but less so than some that I've seen, right? So it's hard for me to say that fully because it was so voluntary, right? And it happened, and they closed down the service. They gave a call, and they closed down the service if you wouldn't play volleyball or whatever, you know. So you go to some churches, and they're just up there hounding people, right? You know, no, seriously, I know this is my third time to say this, but there's some of you who are going to die tonight, and you've got to, you know, and they're up there just, like, hitting them every emotional note, whereas this was kind of a more of an intellectual presentation. But so I want to be honest with that, but I still feel the whole idea that if you're telling someone that they're going to die, they're going to go to hell tonight is mostly manipulative, no matter how it's presented, right? Just because it's a very emotional plea, and you just kind of have a hard, it's a bit hard to make I know the scriptures keep used for it, but it's kind of hard to make a very airtight case that it's always the case, right? There just seems to be this kind of gray line, and even C.S. Lewis explored that in The Last Battle. I don't know if you've read all of the Chronicles of Narnia. I mean, I kind of assume you're the kind of person that would, but I'm just so bummed. I love where we're going to get The Last Battle of the movie, because I would love to see what they could do with that Last Battle of the movie. It would be horrible, probably, but I would love to see what they do with it. As far as the movie goes, I love it as a book, but there's that whole deal with the dwarf, or, you know, one of the bad guys that ended up in heaven, right? Because C.S. Lewis is kind of exploring that, and some of them were even there and they didn't realize it, right? They refused to recognize that they were in heaven, but they also saw, that was one of the dwarfs, the dwarfs refused to recognize that they were in heaven, but there was one of the bad guys roaming around, right? Or one of the followers of the evil people that was there. And C.S. Lewis kind of explored this concept that you don't know exactly who all is going to be in heaven. Because it's a bit of a gray area. There's definitely this, you know, definite areas of these, you know, certain types of things. If you had faith, you'll be there, and so on. But anyway, I'm kind of rambling and kind of botching it, you know, several spiritual points that would require several hours to unpack. But so I think just the whole idea of trying to manipulate people to that one decision point is going to be manipulative. There could be better ways to present it, but yeah, it gets a bit problematic. And you have a lot of churches that are very clearly crossing the line into abuse by hounding people over it and scaring the hell out of people with literal, like, hell houses and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a hell house here on the not too far from where I live, and they seem packed around Halloween. You know, there's a lot of people interested in that. So I guess since what Knott was writing about in The Great Prophet, and since we both went to Assemblies of God churches, and I had visited some Vineyard churches, you know, here and there as well, because there wasn't that much of a difference. You could easily go to and fro and not feel that you were out of place, at least during that time period. But one thing I remember being taught in the Assemblies of God was, you know, it's a decision based theology. So you make that decision. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you made it with the right mindset. Hopefully you didn't make it. There's the contradiction, right? Did you make it just because you were scared? Well, if you did, then you really didn't make the right decision. Or if you made the decision, but you know, you saw some hot chick three pews up, or she went to the altar. So you know, there's a lot of things that would cause that decision to be not valid. But once you think you got past that, what I was taught that I found really harmful was that you then would submit to the Holy Spirit, and the sign of doing that was speaking in tongues. So if you didn't fully submit, then you weren't able to speak in tongues. I don't know if you were taught that or if that was kind of laid out, but I felt like that. I mean, I was taught that verbatim, right? This is how it is. That becomes extremely, extremely manipulative too, because then the authority can be based on, well, Matt speaks in tongues, so obviously what he's saying is correct, right? So there's some manipulative methods involved in that, because if you're taught that, you'll if you're taught that the sign of being completely sold out to God is speaking in tongues, then by default, I guess, then you are going to assume that the person speaking in tongues is directly hearing from God. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Did you get any of that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a whole lot I could say on that one. But because we had, I went to churches where we had entire altar calls where people were just coming up to receive the gift of tongues, right? And I guess you saw those, assume you saw those as well. But I just remember, you know, I after a while, you stay at these churches, you become, you know, not just a person in the pews, but you go find you become an altar worker, right, if you've been around enough. And so I'd be up there praying for people who were trying to receive the gift of tongues, and they would just be devastated when it wasn't happening, right, and just crying because they couldn't do this, you know, very weird thing called speaking in tongues, right? And that was Assembly of God. And I didn't go to a Vineyard church until we moved up to Dallas. We were involved with a independent church. It's actually a very famous church. It's a very famous remodeling house couple that goes there. I won't say their names, but their pastor, who's been in hot seat for a few theological issues, is actually the pastor who married us. And we've known several people on their TV show with that. But even at that church, you know, there was calls for people to come receive the gift of tongues. There's kind of also this weird gray area where people will say, okay, no, we don't believe in salvific tongues, right? You're not, you know, there's actually people out there who believe that if you're not speaking in tongues, you're not saved, right? And then people will say, okay, well, we don't believe in that, but there's just kind of this gray area where we're just not sure. If you're not speaking in tongues and you say you're saved, so you've got to start speaking in tongues so we can be sure that you're saved, right? It's kind of this, you know, gray area, right? And so I just saw a lot of that, and then you get to the place where I don't know what the terminology people use, like anointed or anointing, you know, there's an anointed person, right? And so, and your anointing was based on your gifts in the Spirit, which was obvious one to be speaking in tongues. Or you could also see getting a word from the Lord, right? I got a word for you, brother, you know, kind of thing. So this whole culture of manipulation grows up around that, right? And I definitely saw a lot of people manipulate into a lot of things. Going overseas, the missionaries even, you know, because someone got a word for them, right? Because someone, all kinds of things. I go on forever about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm thinking back because I've seen people sent on journeys because someone had a word, or I've had several words spoken over me. Some really damaging stuff, you know, stuff that wasn't true. But again, if you're taught that if someone speaks in tongues and they have that authority, then who are you, especially as a teenager, to question those sorts of things? I think that's one reason why I moved back into, you know, more of a, I don't want to say moderate church because their Christianity is not moderate. But they mm-hmm. you know, there's this term, the Lutheran middle, you know, where you kind of examine all things and test all things.
Yeah,
I found that a little bit safer of a place to be than somewhere where people can just, you know, say whatever they want to. You know, in our church, in the Assemblies of God church, it was three fast songs, and then you slowed down the last fast song, and then after you sang that last fast song slow, somebody would speak in tongues or give a prophecy or whatever, then you would do three slow songs. And then I watched, man, it was, what's the name of that series on Amazon? Is it Wild West? About the cult that moved out to, oh my goodness. Well, anyway, it was, it's really cool. They moved to a small town and kind of took it over. It was Rajneesh, I forgot the guy's name. But anyway, I was watching, they showed their worship service, and it was the same thing. They would jump all around, very, you know, ecstatic. And then all of a sudden they would slow it down. And so you had this, it's like when you, as a kid, and you run and then you stop and you have all this stuff flowing through your body. And then that was used as part of going into the set of slow songs. You use that energy from the fast songs. I was like, wow, this is very similar here. I guess, you know, you're a parent, I'm a parent. What do you do? Right. I mean, your parents sent you to there. So you know, to avoid a life of crime, you can't watch everything your kids do, but kids are they question a lot, but they also, you know, kind of accept things that authority tells them in some ways, and especially when you're dealing with God and you don't want to fry in hell. What are you supposed to do? I mean, there's how do you protect your children and younger people from that kind of abuse? Can you even do that, or is it something they need to figure out? I mean, I'm asking that on several levels. One is a parent, but the other one is, you know, we have this magazine of Christian music and Christian topics, and I would venture to say that maybe a majority of the people that read our magazine aren't even Christians anymore, probably because of stuff like that. Is that too much of a stretch?
Yeah, I mean, we've never asked, but it does seem like it. I wouldn't be surprised if it was so.
So it's very bizarre, right? So it's, you're in this post-Christian world, and a lot of that isn't the rejection of God or Jesus. A lot of it is the rejection of what you were taught God was, or how God works. So you just got sick of all the manipulation, so you left. So how do you call out these things? And, you know, we had talked before we started recording this, you know, they got all the sexual abuse stuff that's going on, but is calling out spiritual abuse a valid thing to do as well, even though it might have happened 20 years ago? Is that something people should be doing?
Yeah, I definitely agree that it's something that people should be doing, and people have been doing it. I kind of have my group of people that I used to go to church with. We have private messages going on Facebook whenever someone's, you know, going off saying something, you know, about, you know, the evil homosexual agenda or something like that. You know, they're just going off on this really hard right. Some of them, both new rides, will start messaging each other. Can you believe they're saying this? You know, they're just lying about that. That didn't happen back in the day, you know, and all this kind of stuff, you know. And so, you know, there have been people calling it out. I think that they've been, you know, even Michael Knott was one on the record, you know, made a record about it. So I don't think it's going to get the same kind of attention in the national news just because people don't understand if they don't go to the church, you know. There's going to be just, well, why you still go, you know, why did you stop going, you know. But I think it should be called out. I just think that it's probably not going to receive the same kind of attention, and you're probably just, people are going to get ostracized for it more often than anything else. And I could be totally wrong. I would be glad to be wrong on that, you know. Maybe it does catch natural attention, right? but it's, you know, that's something we've been wrestling with as parents ourselves about what to do with our son. He's, you know, 8 years old. And, you know, we've tried going to a few churches, and then it just kind of gets into this hardcore weird stuff starts getting said. And you know, someone, the last church we went to, you know, someone just started talking about, well, you know, liberals, they just want to kill babies. And have you seen videos proving they want to kill babies? And we're just like, okay, look, you don't have to be a liberal, but don't say stuff like that about liberals. That's just not true, you know? I mean, you know, it's just, you know, And so we stopped going to that church for a few other reasons as well, you know, just because, you know, simple things. We just saw the same patterns. And it was a Methodist church. You know, Methodists are supposed to be this moderate middle church. And we just saw all these things that were coming just straight out of, you know, extreme fundamentalist evangelicalism that we didn't want our son exposed to. So we're just like, you know, we're the new people of this church. We're not going to call this stuff out. We're just going to have to find a different church. You know, we're still searching, you know. And I think you just kind of have to ride this fine line of you do speak out about it, but you also stay away from it and keep your kids away from it, too, if you see it, you know, possibility happening as well. So that doesn't really offer many solutions.
Yeah, no, but it's definitely the way to go and teach your kids how to discern. I remember on a missions trip once, people were having a good time. Everybody was laughing and joking, and somebody had a word from the Lord that we're just to remain serious the whole time and not laugh and have fun. Well, all right. Well, she spoke in tongues, so I guess she was right. It's that kind of crazy stuff. And then, of course, if everybody buys into the same idea that, you know, if you reach that plateau of speaking in tongues, then nobody's really going to correct each other either, you know, because it's all being used to control and manipulate, even though maybe people don't, you know, necessarily realize that that's what they're doing, and pushing people out and pushing people away, which is obviously extraordinarily harmful when someone questions their salvation, because the only way they were taught about salvation was incorrect. So that's, you know, there's a lot of problems there. And, you know, like I said, I know a lot of post-Christians, you know, a lot of post-Christians, and that's how they identify, but I don't know if they're really post-Christian. They're post BS that they were taught at church, that they haven't denied Christ. True, yeah. Right. Interesting. Methodist churches, though, I know some Methodist pastors and people that go to Methodist churches, and they're kind of all over the spectrum. You know, as far as being conservative or liberal, and so, you know, so there's a wide variety of Methodist churches there. It's just fascinating. So how do you, like, so with my kids, I actually gave Mikey all my Narnia books. I have the Space Trilogy. I'm trying to find the last one so I can give it to him. He takes a class at UNO, University of New Orleans, and Bible as literature. So we talked about the Hebrew word Alma in Isaiah and how it was mistranslated by Matthew in the New Testament because he only had the Septuagint, the Greek version of the Old Testament. And that word then was translated into virgin, and how it meant something different in Isaiah than it does in Matthew. And that was just such a key point, because I know conservative pastors that say, no, in Isaiah, it was talking about Jesus. And I'm like, yeah, but it was also talking about someone who was born back then during that time period. And they defend stuff that doesn't need to be defended. You know, that's part of it as well. Some things you just need to let be a mystery. And some things you just can't swallow intellectually or spiritually, and so you leave. You say, well, this is the dumbest argument I ever heard, you know, about anything. I'll see you later. There's lots of issues there, and obviously we're not going to solve any of those today, and obviously I still have a lot of baggage dealing with some of those issues. I remember once I was dating this girl, and we went to Six Flags. It was in Texas. We were in Texas, and there was a Christian, like, Christian day, you know, whatever. And so we walked in, and the next act up was Carmen. And so Carmen gets up there and starts doing his stuff, and we were just both sitting there, right? And so the lady behind us leans over and says, hey, the Lord just spoke to me, and he said that y'all are worshiping each other more than you're worshiping God. And I said, okay, thanks, and moved on. I'm like, no, Carmen sucks. Did he tell you that? That's what he should have told you. But it's that sort of stuff, right? So if you're not participating in the whole thing, or you're questioning the music, then you're the one that gets pushed out, and that's problematic. I don't like Mumford and Sons. I don't like Coldplay. So if the next 20, 30 years of praise and worship music, I'm not going to listen to, because that's kind of where it all sounds like.
That's true. Yeah.
But that shouldn't be a problem, right? I should be able to, mm-hmm. to listen to what I want to, and but churches kind of put all those things together, and I find that very manipulative as well. You know, well, you got to listen to this kind of music, and you know that, and that's probably why Not got in trouble is too. You know, and all these other bands that we cover mm-hmm. in the magazine is because they weren't playing that game musically or lyrically, and it wasn't just Not; it was Daniel Amos with Bible Land, Hide the Beer, The Pastors Here. There was a lot of bands that were poking at the system one way or another, and of course got shunned by them. I know. Do you know who Tex Mars is? He's kind of like this fundamentalist guy. He came out with this thing. It was in the 80s, and I thought I saved it forever. Maybe it'll turn up again. But Terry Taylor, I told him about it. He's like, oh, I really want to see that. But they showed the DA logo on Vox Humana, and he was said, well, that's a devil angel equivalent or something like that. And he goes off into some mm-hmm. weird cult thing. You know, so people just attacked anything that was different.
Oh, yeah.
And if you, again, have some sort of authority, people respect that. And that happens in any realm. You know, I studied a little bit in psychology. It's just when someone has that doctorate hanging on their door, or a doctor has their coat on, you automatically respect them more without even knowing anything about them, really, because of the diploma they have or the clothes that they're wearing, the authority that they portray. And it's the same way if you think speaking in tongues is the final step of completely surrendering to God. So mm-hmm. that's problematic. But anyway, I'll quit rambling on about that. Can you think of any other albums from that time period that kind of started, or any time period that kind of started poking at what was going on besides those two? Those are the two big ones that come to me off the top of my head.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a ton of them on the Blonde Vinyl label in general. They were probably attracted there by Not himself.
Yeah.
They're not as overtly as he has, but, you know, definitely a lot of people asking a lot of hard questions. I think even if you listen to some of the Breakfast with Amy stuff, they were just kind of mocking a lot of it, you know. they have that one song, actually, where they have all the people talking, it's all the Christianese are saying, hey, brother, good to see you. It's a great day in the Lord. And then, you know, I can't remember the name of the song. It was on one of their albums. It's just all these Christianese terms all thrown in there as if there's a big crowd of people talking. And it's so they were probably more on the satire mocking side of things. Steve Taylor, you know, also definitely asked a lot of questions about stuff that got him in trouble as well. Trying to think who else.
Yeah, he did. We Don't Need No Color Code.
That was
early 80s, or at least 84 or something, where that came out.
Yeah. If you dig into the Tape Underground as well, there was No Laughing Matter. A lot of bands that really stayed in the Tape Underground. Mark Blaine Jay, the Craze Bunnies and people like that. I mean, a lot of people doing that kind of stuff as well there. I might have just gone so deep, but there's only like two people out there that know what I'm talking about.
No, let me ask you a question. So I found some kind of way the No Laughing Matter stuff online, really bad versions of, you know, the stuff done by, I guess, the lead singer. Do you know much about them or how to contact them? Because I'd like to find out what they're all about, because I missed out on that. That was like in Arizona? That was like way out there? Yeah. I didn't know about any of that until a few years ago, and I found it online. Do we have any contact with any of those guys, or is that just...
Yeah, not directly. Scott Roman, the guy who did that, he does have his blog that he put up, and he was selling some of the stuff, but then it just went silent for a while. And he recently appeared and said, real quick, no, hey, I'm still alive, but barely. And
oh, wow.
So I was like, oh, great. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people are just going through health problems as we all do when we get older, and it's unfortunate. But I can send you that blog link, and you can try and, you know, contact him through that. But there's a guy named Matthew Hunt, who runs Retroactive Records.
Yes.
They put out a lot of heavy metal and other releases. He got the, I don't know if I'm supposed to be saying this, but I think he's told other people this as well. He bought the entire collection of a guy named Dan Kennedy. And Dan Kennedy was kind of like the central place for the tape underground. He did a zine called Cutting Edge.
Okay.
There's about 140 issues of it. But,
really?
And he, yeah, not that many, but there's a lot of them. I think I do have an issue 140 somewhere, 120 or something. Yeah, there's a lot of them. But he had hundreds of tapes, and Matthew Hunt got a hold of them. And Dan Kennedy, unfortunately, passed away, and so Matthew Hunt bought his whole collection. He has them sitting in a storage bin, and he just sends me like 100 of them in a box at a time. And I'll just sit there and just each day I'll just try to digitize one of them, you know, and send it back to him. And it's just like, it's like early stuff by Raspberry Jam. It's stuff I've never heard of. I mean, I'm looking at the box here of stuff that I like. I have never heard of the Juggernauts. I have never heard of Thresh. I've never heard of Yukon Fudge. I mean, it's all this weird underground stuff I've never heard of. You know, but it's also like I had the first, I just did it the other day. It's the first tape by a band called The Children, which, where is this right here? The Children is where Michael Pitzel from Father Burning started out. So it's his very first recording.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and so and also the guy who went on to do like Acoustic Shack was in there as well. And so I've been blogging about those and putting those online as well. So every once in a while, people from that scene will come out on the blog and say, oh, hey, this was me. I can't believe you dug up this stuff. I'm so embarrassed, you know, whatever. But you know, I can kind of get you hooked in with some of those people like that. But anyway, it's kind of a random tangent there. But
no, that's cool.
As far as people like Scott Rowland, we haven't been able to get digest. So
where are you blogging about these tapes?
I can send you the link. Basically, the link is christiantapeunderground.wordpress.com. It's a WordPress blog.
But, okay, cool.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
I think I put it on social media a while back, but, you know, since you've gone off.
Yeah, enough of that, yeah.
I saw you were posting on Google Plus every once in a while, but even that's dying now, so you'll be totally off of social media.
Yeah, I would just, when I'd make a blog post on one of my Google blogs, it would share it. You know, it would ask, do you want to share this on Google Plus? But yeah, I keep getting emails by the end of this month. Google Plus will no longer exist, so I won't have any form of social media. I was kind of wanting to go back like old school, but Friendster I think only works in Asia now. But I just tell people now just to fax me, and then they never follow through. So hey, I got something I want you to help me with. Oh, cool, just fax me, and we'll get it done. And people don't do that, so I don't have to do a lot of stuff that I don't want to. Well, I'll tell you this, though. I know we're running out of time, but when I got off of social media, I got on Meetup, and I found that to be a good blend for me of social media and actually interacting and having meaningful conversations with people, something I didn't feel like was there. I mean, you can tell somebody something mean all day long on Facebook, but if you have to tell them something face-to-face like that, especially after you get to know somebody, it's a little more difficult. I felt like that was a good method of using technology while still maintaining and hopefully having meaningful relationships with people. But anyway, enough of a tangent on that. We are out of time. And man, I didn't know you get arrested. I'm not sure how I'm going to label this podcast, but I think I have an idea now. And thanks to Michael Knott.
Yeah, well.
For letting us use the music again. We appreciate that, and I'll put a link down below again so people can go and buy that record if they want. It's a great record.
Yeah. There are rumors that it will be released on vinyl sometime in the next couple of years or so.
Cool.
Yeah. Waking Up the Dead is being released. I was the one working on the layout for that, and it's finally getting finished up.
Oh, you should be. Wow, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it's, the Kickstarter for that already funded, but at some point they're going to do, they dug up the Bombay Babies Volume 2. Remember, there was a Volume 1 long time ago,
yes.
But no Volume 2. They finally dug a Volume 2, so they're planning on potentially releasing that, hopefully. as a two CD remastered set for that. And then Josh said that he really wants to do The Great Prophet next as the next Kickstarter for a vinyl one. So
okay,
hopefully that'll be coming in vinyl soon. So
yeah, that's awesome. That's
why he put all this on the Facebook group for the Knotheads. So this is not, you know, some secret knowledge or something, but I'm just letting you and your listeners know that they are on Facebook. So
cool. That's great. I do like the remaster of Waking Up the Dead a lot. So
yeah,
that was really, really sounds better. All I had was a cassette, and after I listened to it 300 times, you know how that goes, right? On a cassette player, I probably didn't take care of, and you know, magnetized heads and all that. It didn't sound; it was all very muffled. So it was nice to hear it remastered and know, and I can listen to it a bunch of times, and it wasn't going to, you know, degrade every time I listened to it.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks so much. And maybe I'll put a link to the other tape thing you're doing as well, because that's super cool.
Yeah, it's very interesting. There's some very interesting tapes on there. One about a giant turd. I mean, they've got everything in there. So be ready.